It's Good Friday. Thanks for being with us. Today is Overreaction Friday, I do believe, after what happened with the Cardinals last night. Ivan Maisel is going to be with us today. We're going to shift gears. I'm going to get all into the Cardinals and what happened. Look ahead to the sports weekend. But I'm going to get deep. Part of our Starting the Conversation series that we do on sports and mental health. Ivan, of course, is with ESPN, one of their senior writers, 40 years, one of the terrific college football writers. In 2015, Ivan Maisel's son committed suicide. He went into Lake Ontario, and they didn't find his body for 8 weeks. And Ivan decided to write a book on it that deals with grief and how in our country we don't like to deal with grief. If you're into wanting to be better, I encourage you to watch Ivan and myself. That comes up here in a little bit on his book, a little bit about college football, but primarily what he has been through. When you see him on College Game Day, just know that behind the scenes, there's a story. Everybody's got a book in them. Some are thin, some are really thick, and Ivan's is extraordinarily thick. That is coming up on today's show. We're brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. We appreciate Jeff Mishi and their support. All right, where do you want to start with the Cardinals? I'm watching the game last night at halftime. There is just this outroar on social media about how can this be a low-scoring game? And I think back to Peter King with us on Tuesday morning. He said, you know, I think this is going to be a low-scoring game. Peter, of course, nailing it. And then we start to see the mental mistakes. Then we start to see the thing just kind of spiral out of control to the point where the Cardinals are just flat lucky to be even in a position to have Kyler Murray throw a ball A.J. Green's direction. If you think of the Rondell Moore fumble, if you think of the touchdown that was ruled no touchdown against the Packers, if you think back to the mistakes that were made by the Cardinals and then the injuries that happened with the Cardinals too. One of them was with DeAndre Hopkins, and he decided that he was going to be bigger than the team and check himself back into the game, not once but twice. And Cliff Kingsbury wasn't happy about it afterwards, and I don't blame him. So, yeah, today could be the day of the sky is falling because Kyler Murray left the game last night in a boot, which he did. Okay, we're not going to see Kyler until next Wednesday. So anybody that's going to say, well, he's doing this or doing that at the facility, don't believe them in any way, shape, or form. It will come through the Ian Rappaport's and the Adam Schefter's who will get leaked information by the Cardinals who want it out there. That's how this is going to play out the next 5 days. It just is. You know, watching Aaron Rodgers, it's what sport is all about. I've talked about this through the years, but last night it was reemphasized. You got to have villains. If you were a Cardinal fan last night, Aaron Rodgers took your heart out and stomped on it. This was not, you know, a quarterback that is trying to just hang on for dear life like what we saw with the Texans a week ago. No, this is Aaron freaking Rodgers who walked into the yard last night. And he's calm, he's cool and collected, and the Cardinals beat him up some. He didn't have his top, you know, to win without your top two wide receivers, and really three guys that he was dependent upon. And then to see the Packer running game go right down the throat of the Cardinals, that is clearly the Achilles heel. Now that J.J. Watt is out, that is clearly the Achilles heel. Ball control against Kyler Murray, keep the ball out of his hands. Go 8 minutes, go 9 minutes, drive down the field. This team can't really stop you. And that's a fact. That's a fact. That's not Overreaction Friday. But back to Rodgers, when you just see his composure and the meme that is on social media today, the picture of him going to the ground with a look on his face of, what the heck? And then he's being tackled yesterday, and he's turning to the referee while he's being tackled, like, what the heck? And to hear him talk afterwards about how he's done some cool things, it's given him a different perspective about the game of football. I love what he's all about. It's not just about the game. He's just matured in a way that you gotta love how he handles himself, how he comports himself. If he's on your team, you love him. If he's on your team, you hate him. That's a villain. If the late Kobe Bryant walked into town, fans hated him, he ripped your heart out, but he moved your emotions. That is a good thing. We need more villains in sports. We do. We don't need the blah, blah. You know, when the Suns are playing the Milwaukee Bucks, is Giannis a villain? No, he's a nice guy who's really good. Nice guy's really good. Kobe, man, he just, the polarizing. Aaron Rodgers is polarizing. And I admire greatness. I loved his interview after the game with Aaron Andrews. I love that he said, when was asked, what did you say to Kyler Murray? And he says, we'll see you in the playoffs. How do you not love that if you're a Cardinal fan? Like, in the grand scheme of things, this is a great game that we're talking about today in October. In October, there's so much football season left. There's very few of these games that people can point to and say, wow, did you see Brady against the Patriots the other night? Yeah, it was a great game. Did you see Rodgers and Kyler and AJ Green didn't turn around looking for the football? Yeah, it was. I wouldn't say it was a great game aesthetically. You know, I am one of those that cares about player safety and player health, even though most people don't. So when they do go through car crashes on a Sunday and then they have to go through them again on a Thursday, and people say, well, they get paid a lot of money to do that, and that's the hazard that goes with it. Okay. But I do care about my fellow human being a little bit more than that. Did you see the amount of injuries? Did you see the amount of players that were falling, being carted off? Zaven Collins, I don't know if he's going to be back. I don't know. Kyler has to leave in a walking boot. Yeah, that's the war of attrition. I think it was early in the season where it may have been Moose Johnston who said to me on the show that Colt McCoy may end up being one of the more valuable pickups of backup quarterbacks in this league because there's concern about Kyler making it through a season. And I've agreed with that. Kyler leaving in a walking boot, and he's got an extended bye here. This is going to give them, 9 days until they play again? But maybe he's not at 100%. And then you have a bye here in a few weeks, and maybe you do hold him out of a game. Maybe you do in the middle of the season. Cliff Kingsbury's thought on DeAndre Hopkins. Let's go back to that. So Hopkins, hamstring injuries, down the sideline. Christina Pink of Fox is talking about it. And DeAndre decides to check himself into the game. I'm going to play no matter what my coach says. What a warrior. What? No, that's being about you. It's being about you. Let's just be straight on this. You know, when the Cardinals are playing a game in late October, and yeah, you want to win it, that game in late October versus, yeah, he tore his hamstring completely and now he's not able to play for the rest of the season, which could have happened. Could have happened. Oh, he's a warrior. He's a baller. No, he's not. He's not being a team player. That's that. He's the greatest. How can you say that? Because I'm looking at the whole team. I'm looking at the whole season. If this was week 17 and they had to get into the playoffs or not, completely different story. Completely different story. Late October, season's not going to be decided. This is last night's game. In the grand scheme of things, last night's game is not going to determine whether the Cardinals go to the postseason or not. Because if they crap the bed after the start that they had and just go lose a bunch of games, you know, because DeAndre Hopkins decided in late October, I want to be out on the field, and all of a sudden the receiving core drops considerably. You know, sure, I want someone who's a competitor. Who doesn't? Who doesn't? But there's also a point where you're not being smart. That wasn't being smart. That just wasn't being smart. You know, another guy that needs to be pointed out, and this may be along the fantasy football lines to some, but to me it's just James Conner finds the end zone. Like, the signing of James Conner was not universally hailed around the league because he couldn't stay healthy. James Conner finds his way into the end zone. I can find positives to take away from a night where they end up losing the game. Did they get better in some areas? Did the offensive line, which is now being hit hard by injury, did they have some good moments? Yeah, they did. They have some moments that were not good at all. Yes, and that's going to happen when you change out guys. If you want me to sit here today and just bang on the Cardinals to death, no. It's late October. It was fun last night. It was fun. I didn't care who won or lost. I don't care. I just want to be entertained. That was an entertaining game. The Packers can't. The Packers were 8 of 16. Just so we are straight on this. The Packers were 8 of 16 in third down conversions last night. You're not going to win if your defense can't get the team off the field. You're just not. The Packers had the ball for 37 minutes. The Cardinals had it for 22. What happened? They end up losing the game. Kyler Murray's not out there making plays, running around doing his thing. So, you know, what I left from last night is Murray leaves in a walking boot. They got a situation with DeAndre Hopkins they've got to address. had a bunch of injuries. They have an extended break. What Aaron Rodgers said is right. We'll see you again in the playoffs. That's it. It was a nice way to take 3.5 hours out of a Thursday night. Tomorrow, actually today, later today, I'm going to be with Arizona State. So today is the Legends Lunch at the Biltmore. And I have a table, thanks to Tim Hovick over at Santan Ford. Tim said, take the table, fill it. We're going to be there. We're going to have a couple of players from the Rose Bowl team. They're going to be sitting with us. Jake Plummer and I have been texting back and forth. We're going to catch up. It's going to be a great moment, a great, great lunch today, because Arizona State hasn't found their way back to the Rose Bowl since this group, which, as you know and I know, is inexcusable. So I'm going to be enjoying that quite a bit today. Bob Melvin was wrongly done here in Arizona. He should have never, ever, ever been fired by the Diamondbacks. But because the then general manager, Josh Burns, and the president, Derek Hall, and Bob Melvin all couldn't be in the sandbox together, Bo Mel was the one that was let go. Even though bench coach with Bob Brenly on the World Series did as good a job as possible. So what happens? He goes to Oakland and he wins with next to nothing. And so while the game was going on last night, I get a text, hey, Bo Mel is taking the Padre job. Like, what a great move for him. And what an amazing hire for the Padres. And for our hometown heroes over here, our hometown nine, it's okay. It got a little bit harder now. Just got a little bit harder. See what the Giants did. See what the Dodgers did. And now they have a good manager over there, a competent manager in Bob Melvin. That's a great hire by them. There may be some overreaction Monday if the Suns don't beat Cleveland tomorrow night. And the Coyotes lost again. Just keep losing. They haven't won a game yet this season. They are going to be playing in front of maybe just family, because I don't even know if friends are going to want to go see them the way that this is going so far. It's just been dreadful. All right, Ivan Maisel, we're going to flip the script. That's everything on the Cardinals, what's going on in sports. Brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, we appreciate their support. Ivan Maisel and his new book, we're going to get deep, starting the conversation. That's next. Okay, over the last few weeks, I've been talking about this book that I received last month. I keep trying to catch his eye, A Memoir of Loss, Grief, and Love, written by Ivan Maisel, one of my favorites on the college football scene. This is not a book. This is not a segment about Herm Edwards and ASU against Washington State. This is in our Starting the Conversation platform in mental health, in sports, crossing over. Last month when we did our deep dive on Zach Hoffpower at Stanford, who had passed away, and I visited with his parents inside and out, I thought of this book with Ivan and some of the places that he went to. And I appreciate you coming on for a few minutes to talk about a book about your son and your journey after his death. Is that the best way to sum this up?
I think that's a really good way to sum it up. Thanks for having me. I felt it was important to write the book so that Max wouldn't be defined by how he died, but I wanted to say how he lived. And also, I just wanted to, we have such a struggle with grief. Mm-hmm. And I certainly did before I was thrust into it. And I wanted to try to explain people how I handled grief, how I learned to handle grief, and how I was comforted, you know, what worked for me. And with the idea of helping people, because we as Americans just struggle with grief.
I'm going to read a segment here just off the top. I was going to save this for later, but since you did bring it up, and this is what caught my eye, you know, as I went through this book, I get to page 12 and it's back in mid to late September. And this is about people who don't know how to grieve. I have been, and I'm reading from the book, I have been on the receiving end of a litany of well-meaning, perfunctory responses, reassurances that Max has gone to a better place, queries whether after weeks or months I felt better, as if losing Max could be cured with an antibiotic. The question, is it still hard or no response at all? I do not like euphemisms, unless they're employed for humor. I do not like passed away. I do not like no longer with us. Gone to his glory or met his maker. Max died. He is dead, and softening the language doesn't soften the blow. Sugarcoating doesn't make it easy for anyone but the person saying it. The person who may tiptoe around the loss with cloak language and continue on. with his day. And there's more to it than that. That's just page 12. So I'm telling you all out there that grief and what Ivan went through in this book, if it doesn't move you, nothing will. Was it hard for you to get to that space? And that's really early in the book, too.
It wasn't hard for me to write. It was hard for me to live. But I, you know, honestly, people, again, you know, it's a different way to say the same thing. People just struggle. And they, I think, employing euphemisms like those you just read is done, you know, for them. You know, we're those of us who lost the person, you know, we're experiencing it every moment. Hmm. And, you know, you don't have to sugarcoat it for us. You know, we know he's gone. We know he died. You know, people would come up to me and say, well, I didn't want to bring him up to you, you know, and look, I'm thinking about him every second, you know, so, and honestly, I want you to bring him up, you know, it keeps him present.
Mm-hmm. The part of this, what I'm reading is, how did your family come on board with this? Or was that a struggle? Your wife, your kids, and just
with the book? That,
yeah. Yeah. With the book. Obviously. Yeah.
Yeah. They are, we all feel like this is my story. This is not their story. Okay. And when I finished the manuscript, you know, I handed it or emailed it to all three of them and said, you know, whatever you're uncomfortable with, let's talk about it and I'll fix it. And if I can't fix it to your liking, I'll take it out. And if you're still not comfortable with it, I'll send them their money back. You know, it's just, it wasn't, you know, the book's not that important to cause any kind of rift. And God bless all three of them. You know, my wife, Meg, and our daughters, Sarah and Elizabeth, have been great supporters of it. And in a way, I hope it keeps Max present for them, too.
Sure. Do you believe you've helped people through this book?
Well, I hope so. You know, we'll find out as they purchase it and respond to it. You know, but that was one of my hopes, is that I wanted to be, you know, the phrase I used in the book was a docent through my grief. You know, this is what worked. This is what didn't work. Don't be scared of this. And let's face it, if you live long enough, you're going to have to deal with grief. It's just part of life. Death is part of life. And I was in my mid-50s before I got, you know, hit in the face with it. But I sure know it now.
Is it cathartic?
No, you know, I feel like I had to do all my work before I could sit down at this laptop and start writing. You know, cathartic to me is you pay me and I'll dump all my problems in your lap. And I didn't want to do that. You know, I don't think that's fair to the reader. I feel like I had to sort of get my legs under me before I started writing.
You know, that getting through a book, and I've talked to authors in the past, there comes a point where they have people that just have to kind of nudge them to get it across the finish line. In many cases, not all, but in many cases, did you have that in this book?
Well, I had to, I hate to put it this way, but the pandemic was a gift. You know, all of a sudden my work shrunk, shriveled up, and I had this enormous amount of time last year. So that was just a, you know, sort of a, you know, happy accident. Only in the sense that I had a terrific agent, Nina Madonia. And I think maybe how I would phrase it is, I had a good friend who sort of kicked me in the butt about at the beginning of 2020 and just shook me and said, you know, when are you going to write about Max? Mm. And I had been sort of thinking, you know, I think now is the right time. And Sue Shattuck, my college friend, sort of, you know, grabbed me and said, do it. And I went, okay, you know, now's the time.
Came over the table, if I remember reading it right.
That was the phrase. Not quite literally, but close.
Yeah. Max passed in February of 2015. He went missing. His body washed up on Lake Ontario about 8 weeks later. And so Ivan and his journey has come to this with the book being released now. What have you heard back in terms of feedback early on?
Well, people really seem to be touched and a little gobsmacked by the fact that I am so open. But honestly, I kind of decided, and my wife Meg and I decided early on, we were going to put it all out there, that we weren't ashamed of Max. We weren't going to deal with the stigma of mental illness, or accede to the stigma of mental illness. And there's no shame in being sick. And the other thing was, it was a little bit of self-protection, just that I didn't want to have to worry about, who had top secret clearance, who was I going to tell everything to, who was I going to tell some things to. Any of us could do to put one foot in front of the other. So just put it all out there. The worst thing that could happen had already happened.
Right. You had a moment in the book, and I don't want to give it all away. And again, it is out. If you folks want to make sure you go out and purchase it. And Ivan Maisel with us for a few minutes. And that is a moment you had with Mark Helfrich. And Mark's a good man who was here at Arizona State many, many, many moons ago.
Yes.
And was at Oregon when this moment happened. And so I do want to bring in the college football family side of it to you, and how you found coaches and others going back to your profession with ESPN and going back to business, and how that moment impacted you.
So Max died in February, the depth of the offseason. By June, I could feel the season approaching, and I thought, you try to get back on the horse. And I went out to Oregon to do a piece, and I had an early morning meeting with Mark, an interview, and he only had about half an hour. And after about 25 minutes, I closed my notebook, and I was kind of glassy-eyed at that point, to be honest with you. I was really tentative. And Mark, just said, okay, can I ask you a question? Sure. He said, how are you doing? And I just sort of melted right there in his office.
Yeah.
And I'm getting choked up now thinking about it. But he was dealing with his own grief, and we sat there and talked for another 15, 20 minutes. He was late to his next meeting, but it was just such a kind gesture. And obviously never forgot it. I put it in the book, but there were a number of coaches as I re-entered my workspace over the summer and over that 2015 season, that before I could do anything would stop. Before I could ask any question, would ask me how I was doing, tell me about somebody in their world and their family that was having struggles. And it was just very kind. People were very nice.
Yeah. Well, it was a great read, just as a reader, but as someone who has gone through grief and loss myself, it really did touch me in many, many ways. I appreciate your time and your insights.
Thanks so much for having me.
The book is out, I Keep Trying to Catch His Eye, Memoir of Loss, Grief, and Love. Please pick this up. It will impact you. We're back with more after this time out.